And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm still Uncle Dennis, and there's still more important information coming up, so please do keep that pencil and recycled paper handy, and we're going to get right on to more announcements here. The National Conference on Organized Resistance, formerly the National Conference on Civil Disobedience, is in its fourth successful year. In years past, the NCCD has played a significant role in coordinating a dialogue between activist groups and sparking in-depth discussion of the strategy and tactics of our various social justice movements. This year, the NCOR again envisions a useful forum for cutting-edge discussion for people at all different levels of involvement. Last year, over 600 people converged on Washington, D.C. for a weekend of experience, discussion, planning, and protest. Don't miss this year. We have a fantastic weekend scheduled. NCOR, the National Conference on Organized Resistance, will be held the weekend of January 27th and 28th. I guess in Washington, D.C. It doesn't say exactly where it'll be held this year, but I assume it's again in Washington, D.C., and will involve over 30 workshops on topics such as counterintelligence, activist gatekeeping, the prison industrial complex, food politics, nonviolence, and anarchism. Speakers will include Ward Churchill. Strange how that name keeps popping up. Cindy Milstein, Rod Coronado. How that name keeps popping up. Julie Davids, Mark Goldstone, and many, many others. $10 to get in. That's all the workshops, all weekends, only $10. Check out the schedule to register, find out about rides and housing, and anything else you might want to know. Visit www.organizedresistance.org. That's www.organizedresistance.org, and do it today. Let's see here. Critical habitat has been proposed for the San Bernardino kangaroo rat. Responding to a court order, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Carlsbad, California, is proposing to designate 55,000 acres in two California counties as critical habitat for the endangered San Bernardino kangaroo rat. Proposed habitat includes a mix of federal, tribal, state, private, and county lands. The San Bernardino kangaroo rat, which was listed as endangered in 1998, occurs in about six scattered, isolated patches of alluvial sage scrub throughout San Bernardino and Riverside counties. The species is threatened by continued habitat loss. How unusual. Degradation and fragmentation due to sand and gravel mining operations, flood control projects, and urban development. That nasty sprawl again. Three of the largest blocks of remaining habitat for these species are mined for sand and gravel, and mining activities in these areas are expected to increase. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been working with landowners, flood control districts, and federal and state agencies on habitat conservation for the kangaroo rat. The designation of critical habitat should not affect our ongoing efforts to develop and implement HCPs, said Michael Spear, manager of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service of California, Nevada. And, of course, it took a lawsuit to get this critical habitat designated. If you'd like more information, go to carlsbad.fws.gov. There's no triple W in there. It's just carlsbad.fws.gov. Public comments on this proposed habitat will be accepted until February 6th. You can send email to fw1cfw0_sbkr@fws.gov. I'll read that one more time. fw1cfwo_sbkr@fws.gov. And here you go. Just when you thought all hope was lost, the California Department of Forestry is now making timber harvest plans available on the web. Let me tell you, this is a step into the 21st century for the most antiquated agency in the California government. How do you get there? Well, it's www.fire.ca.gov/resource-management/thinca.asp. I'll read that URL once more. And of course, just go to www.fire.ca.gov. And you should be able to find your way the rest of the way, but the rest of the way is /resource-management/thinca.asp. Environmental Justice Small Grants Program. You want money? Well, listen closely. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is requesting proposals for fiscal year 2001 Environmental Justice Small Grants Program. The environmental justice is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, culture, education, or income, with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. Fair treatment means that no one group of people, including racial, ethnic, or socioeconomic groups, should bear a disproportionate share of the negative environmental consequences resulting from industrial, municipal, or commercial operations, or the execution of federal, state, local, and tribal environmental programs and policies. Preference will be given to community-based, grassroots organizations that are working on local solutions to local environmental problems. Funds can be used to develop a new activity or substantially improve the quality of existing programs that have a direct impact on affected communities. $1.5 million are expected to be available. The grants range from $15,000 to $20,000, and cost sharing is not required. Responses are due by 3901. For more information, go to the Federal Register announcement or contact your regional Environmental Protection Agency Environmental Justice Program Manager. Regional contact information is available at www.epa.gov/swerosps/EJ. That's www.epa.gov/swerosps/EJ. And I hope you got all that. Are you looking for Casey Neal or the Casey Neal Trio? Well, they're going to be in Berkeley on January 11th at the Starry Plow, 3101 Shattuck Street, at 9 p.m. $6 to get in. And that's only Casey Neal solo. There's no trio. January 19th and 20th, they're going to be in Ocean Shores, Washington at the Galloway Bay. The full trio with no cover charge. You get in for free. More information at www.galway-bay.com. And I'll have more information about future Casey Neal concerts at future dates. Now, here's an interesting one for you folks who are internet connected. Cyber jukebox benefit for the rainforests. You've heard about these sites where you go out, like Save the Rainforest, Save the Wild Cats. When you click on the little button and you supposedly money gets sent to these various organizations to save these various things. Well, here's an interesting one. This is Help Save the Rainforest. Visit www.rainforestjukebox.org. That's rainforestjukebox.org. Every click counts, it says. A rainforest benefit concert for Ecuador's jungle, the monkeys, dolphins, jaguars, mighty trees, and indigenous people. Some of Australia's finest musicians have donated their songs to help save the rainforest. At www.rainforestjukebox.org, you can hear 40 tracks of music streaming forth to benefit Ecuador's jungles. Over 60 Australian artists have contributed to the Rainforest Jukebox, including Midnight Oil, Jebediah, Cruel C, Nancy Vandal, Powderfinger, Ruby Hunter, Archie Roach, The Red-Eyed Frogs, Vince Jones, Diana Onade, Super Jesus, Skunk Hour, Stiff Gins, The Whitlams, Penelope Swales. All these environmental musicians from northern New South Wales complete the concert with songs for the trees, animals, indigenous peoples, and the shining future for the earth. Proceeds from this benefit support rainforest conservation projects in Ecuador, initiated and run by Australian volunteers from the Lismore-based Rainforest Information Center. And, of course, that's the famous environmental group founded by John Seed. And you can contact John Seed or Ruth Rosenheck, two great activists. Of course, it's an international call, but 011-612-662-13294. That's 011-612-662-13294. Or you can send email to johnseed@ozemail.com.au. That's johnseed@ozemail.com.au for Australia. And we're going to take a little break from news here and go into some commentary. This one is entitled, Logging Does Not Reduce Fire Risk, Two Studies Conclude, and written by Kat Lazaroff of Environmental News Service. A great writer, does a lot of great stuff. Anyway, two new studies, one by an environmental group, one by a congressional research group, have concluded that logging in U.S. national forests does not protect them against devastating forest fires. In fact, logging activities often increase a forest fire risk, the studies show. Quote, the acres burned in any particular year appear to be at most weakly related to the volume of timber harvested, according to a report by the Congressional Research Service, a bipartisan research group that analyzes federal policies for Congress. The report was released by Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat who requested the study after Republican lawmakers tried to blame this year's catastrophic fire, that's last year's catastrophic fire season, the worst in the western U.S. in 50 years, on federal policies that reduce commercial logging in national forests. Quote, my sense is that this is a problem that cries out for an examination that goes far deeper than the next election, said Wyden. Quote, timber harvesting removes the relatively large diameter wood that can be converted into wood products and leaves behind the small material, especially twigs and needles, wrote Ross Gort, author of the CRS report. The concentration of these fine fuels on the forest floor increases the rate of spread of wildfires. Since 1989, logging in national forests has been cut by more than 75%. The CRS report examines logging levels and fire activity for the past 20 years. Critics of the report said it is inconclusive regarding the contributions of logging to fire risk. The study found that two of the four worst fire years, 1987 and 88, coincided with some of the highest timber harvest years of the past two decades. In 1987, almost 12.7 billion board feet of timber was harvested from 192 million acres of national forest lands. Another 12.6 billion board feet was harvested in 1988. But in two other high fire years, 1994 and 96, timber harvests were low, and unfortunately the report did not look at last year. Once this year is factored in, I think you'll see what we've been saying all along. If there is more wood in a forest, there is a stronger possibility of a fire there, said Derek Jumper, a spokesperson for the American Forest and Paper Association, the bad guys. As bad as this year has been, it will probably pale in comparison to future wildfire seasons if timber harvests continue to be cut, Jumper said. American Forest and Paper, one of the timber industry's largest groups, supports tree thinning to prevent wildfire from racing through stands of trees by jumping from crown to crown. The industry has pushed for thinning to be included in a new U.S. Forest Service fire management plan for wilderness areas. The Northwest Forestry Association, another industry group, blames drought, hurricanes, invasive insects, and diseases for leaving stands of vulnerable dead and dying trees, and federal policy for preventing salvage logging that could clear these fire traps from national forests. Current well-intentioned but misguided regulations require exhaustive environmental documentation, delaying harvests of diseased and burned timber indefinitely, says an NFA policy paper on logging and wildfire. As such, usable salvaged timber wastefully rots away, resulting in lost government income from potential sales and economic privation for local communities. But a report released by the Pacific Biodiversity Institute and Environmental Coalition counters arguments by the timber industry and some lawmakers that logging is needed to reduce fire risk. The assessment of summer 2000 wildfires in western United States in relationship to landscape history, current landscape condition, and land ownership analyzed the location size, land ownership, and forest type and management history of five of this year's largest fires. It also reviewed regional fire patterns over the last century. Only 31% of the acreage burned was on national forest land. Much of the land burned was grasslands, juniper wildlands, and other non-forest areas. Much of the forested area which burned was managed timberland, which had already been logged, not pristine old growth. Just 38% of the areas burned were in rowless or wilderness areas targeted by the timber industry as among those most at risk for wildfires. The Pacific Biodiversity Institute study also supports arguments that wildfire is a natural process, not a danger to be countered. Much of the burning documented in the study occurred in forests where intense fire is natural, such as lodgepole pine forests. These ecosystems were prone to periodic fires which wipe out entire stands of trees, the institute said. Fires sparked by lightning are a natural part of forest life, many environmentalists argue. The 6.5 million acres burned this last year were well below the century's average, the report said. From 1916 to 1999, an average of 13.9 million acres has burned each year. Analysis of five of last year's largest fires confirmed the large long-term trends for America's West. 36% of the area was non-forested, 57% was in naturally high-intensity burn forest types, and just 8% occurred in naturally cool-burning forest types like ponderosa pine. Most of the acres burned were in roaded, managed forests. When the smoke clears, the claims of logging advocates are revealed to be hot air, says Mitch Friedman, executive director of the Northwest Ecosystem Alliance. If the American people didn't already know that you can't save a forest by cutting it down, the proof has now emerged from the flames themselves. I want to thank Kat Lazaroff for that commentary. And here's another commentary from the Christian Science Monitor. Doesn't say who wrote it, so we'll assume that it's an editorial by the editorial board of the Christian Science Monitor. Last summer's disastrous forest fires in the West have left behind millions of darkened acres, but they've also sparked some useful ideas about how to avoid such disasters in the future. Some of those ideas were included in a fire prevention plan drawn up by the Clinton administration, and it may not solve all the problems confronting the fire-prone Western forests, recurrent drought conditions, for instance, but it's a definite step towards better forest management, and it ought to receive the requested $2.8 billion in funding from Congress. At the heart of last year's severe fire season lay decades of misguided policies that allowed a tremendous buildup of brush and small tree growth on the forest floor. By striving to put out all fires in the best tradition of Smokey the Bear, the forest governmental managers set the stage for really big fires. The administration plan calls for more prescribed burns to help clear the forest of its smaller plants. It's an indispensable step, despite the controversy whipped up by the purposely set fire that got out of control in the area near Los Alamos, New Mexico, late last year. That sad incident underscored the need for a more thorough training for those who do the work of prescribed burning, but some thickly forested areas, particularly those close to communities and dwellings, are too flammable to chance a control burn. What's needed first there is thinning by work crews. That's another key part of the plan and carries the seeds of possible controversy and stalling. Who's to do the thinning? Administration officials, such as Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt on his way out in a few days, argue for locally recruited teams that go specifically after small growth that serves as tinder for forest fires. He foresees some 8,000 federally paid jobs being created along the lines of the Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps. But the logging industry would like to do the work, too, and has many supporters in Congress. Perhaps the industry can have a role, but we'll have to come up with a proviso that this is not an invitation to cut at will, taking fire-resistant older trees along with the scrub growth. When the administration officials met with Western governors to discuss the plan, they agreed to shelve the issue of logging. The governors, mostly Republicans, who have often criticized Clinton policies, concurred that the overriding concern is forest health. They welcomed the prospect of mobilizing local communities to take part in planning the fire prevention action and in the forest thinning itself. That hopeful note implies that the lessons of the summer of 2000 have been learned. I want to thank the Christian Science Monitor for that editorial. And moving into news, top of the news here. And environmental groups in Europe claim forestry practices in the Australian state of Tasmania have revealed a giant loophole in the proposed Kyoto Protocol to reduce global warming. Greenpeace and the World Wildlife Fund say rather than helping the environment, the proposal under the Kyoto Protocol will allow nations to claim credits for tree planting may actually accelerate the destruction of native forests. They are citing the Tasmanian examples of Japanese power companies sponsoring the destruction of high conservation value native forests to be replaced by fast-growing plantations, which it's then intended would be claimed as carbon credits under the international treaty to be hammered out in The Hague. The United States, Australia, and Japan strongly favor a carbon trading system which would allow countries to increase their atmospheric pollution provided they acquire sufficient credits. And U.S. Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt unveiled a new management plan for California's Yosemite National Park that aims to reduce crowding and traffic congestion in the park, which gets 4 million visitors a year. The centerpiece of the long-anticipated plan is an expanded shuttle bus system intended to cut automobile traffic by 55% in the next decade. The plan would also restore 180 acres to a natural state and eliminate a number of roads, parking spaces, campsites, and employee housing units. But it would allow for the construction of new commercial cabins and other buildings. Although the Wilderness Society praised the draft plan, the Sierra Club and some other environmentalists like Earth First say it permits too much new development and doesn't go far enough to protect the park's natural resources. Just before his death, legendary environmentalist David Brower described the Yosemite plan as greenwash and half-baked. And Denmark has announced that it is to become the first country in the world to impose a wide-ranging ban on the heavy metal lead. The move is in defiance of opposition from the majority of the EU's 15 member states and a negative opinion from the European Commission's chief scientific committee. Environment Minister Fend Akun also claimed a world first in that the restrictions will apply also to cadmium, mercury, and nickel, in line with our declared goal of limiting the use of heavy metals as much as possible. Products affected are to include those containing lead compounds, such as plastic stabilizers, as well as metallic lead used for ballast and weight. The plan is to take effect in many products in March, but others will come into force over several years, given that alternatives are still undergoing trials or in the development stage, Alkin said. Danish plans to ban heavy metal lead for health reasons are scientifically unjustified, a European Commission scientific committee decided last June, but the opinion backs objections raised by 12 of the 15 European Union member states and the European Commission. And Spanish peaks, twin granitic peaks erupting from the plains in southern Colorado, are Colorado's newest wilderness area. President Clinton signed legislation protecting 18,000 acres near La Veta, containing the striking peaks which rise more than 12,500 feet and form the Rocky Mountains' easternmost promontory. And the designation bans mining, logging, and building in the area, reserving the peaks for hiking, camping, and similar uses. Now that President Clinton has signed this important bill into law, we are assured that the beauty and splendor of the Spanish peaks will be protected for future generations to come, according to Senator Wayne Allard, a former opponent of the plan. The Spanish peaks have been among the most important landmarks of the southwestern United States, guiding Native American tribes, Spanish and French trappers, prospectors, hunters, and settlers. They became the first new wilderness designated in Colorado since 3.3 million acres were set aside in 1993. The area was first proposed as wilderness by the Forest Service in 1979, but it took 18 years before Representative Scott McGinnis, a Republican from Grand Junction, along with former Representative David Skaggs, a Democrat from Boulder, introduced a bill to protect the area. While McGinnis and Allard have opposed other restrictions on federal land use, they supported the bill to preserve the arresting landmark and boost tourism in the region. The protected area in the San Isabel National Forest would surround east and west Spanish peaks, solid blobs of exposed granite standing 13,626 feet high. And a report recently released by the General Accounting Office found that the four national land management agencies have not properly managed snowmobile and personal watercraft use on public lands. According to the report, about 60% of the agency's jurisdictions had not collected any data on the impact of the machines, and another 20% said they'd collected too little data to make decisions about where the machines should and shouldn't be allowed. The report noted the agencies lacked the manpower and money necessary for thorough studies, which more than two-thirds of the managers interviewed say they lacked people to enforce restrictions already in place. In one example cited in the report, the Shoshone National Forest in Wyoming has only two enforcement officers to cover 2.2 million acres. And that's about all the time we have for news tonight on Earth First Radio. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzeif@cruzio.com. That's cruzeif@cruzio.com. Or send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That address again, Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance so Uncle Dennis can get them on the air in a timely fashion. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their current address, soon to change, but currently is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. As soon as we get that new address, we'll let you know. But currently, it's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on the Internet every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC. And listen in. There's lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime. And if you missed that live show, you can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to Daryl Cherney. This one's called The Ballad of the Lonely Tree Spiker. It's off his cassette called They Don't Make Hippies Like They Used To.
When I was a young boy in the Sierra Club, I prayed to the Freds and the good Lord above. I asked them for wilderness and some old-growth trees. I quoted the facts and I always said, please. Yeah. But after a few years, it dawned upon me, when they built them damn roads and they cut all the trees, that I was a fool, too blind to see. Now I'm a tree spiker, have pity on me. I've been a tree spiker for many a year. I spend all my money on tree spikes and beer. I go down to the valley where the tall timber grows. How many I've gotten, well, nobody knows.
Spike, 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 spike.
I've spiked me some redwood and I've spiked me some pines, and they've tried to stop me with rewards and fines. The cops and the Freddies are hot on my trail. But I'm a tree spiker and I'll never get nailed. Now I've been a tree spiker for many a year. I spend all my money on tree spikes and beer. I go down to the valley where the tall timber grows. How many I've gotten, well, nobody knows.
Spike. Spike.
Join in, everybody,
spike.
And follow the bounce of spike.
I've been a tree spiker for many a year. I spend all my money on tree spikes and beer. I go down to the valley where the tall timber grows.
How many I've gotten, well, nobody knows.